intro? Are you serious? I'm working. Can't you hear that? That's some manly shit right there. Hey, can't you see I'm working here? Happy New Year. Welcome back. Get to it.
Hello. An intro for the SML Welcome Back New Year show? Me? Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm not, busy or anything. I'm only David fucking Ottavino, just the voice of the goddamn United States Capitol Building, GMC, Skechers. Who the fuck does Joe think he is? Yeah, sure. I've got time to do the intro for a podcast no one listens to. I'm Edgar from fucking Brawl Stars, for fuck's sake. Yeah, okay, I'll do it. What the hell? Shoot me the script ASAP. Oh, is this it? Okay. We're back. That's it. We did an entire session just for two goddamn words. Now I see why George is busy all the time. I'd find whatever work I needed to if I had to put up with this shit. I don't have time for this. Fucking unprofessional.
And yeah, that is why I don't think Aki should ever run for president. But
you're shit. Wrong, but that's
it's Tuesday. Shit, it's Tuesday. What's up, everyone? It's the SML podcast. We have not been here for a month debating whether or not Aki should be president. We're here to talk about video games. I am here. Jacob is here. Aki is here. Chris is here. Pernell is here. How is everybody doing? Welcome back. Did y'all enjoy your time off?
Hey, excuse me, I've redeemed something.
Oh, what?
Get cracking.
I'm doing an intro. You expect me to look off to the side?
Yes, I do, okay, and I expect smoke. You to interrupt your intro to take a huge hit. Now do it.
I did.
Oh, that was a pussy one. Fuck a bitch.
Come on up. I'll smoke you under the fucking rug, man.
Be like Bill Clinton, I didn't inhale. Oh.
I will wreck you.
Well, I mean, he didn't. He said it. I believed him.
I will wreck you.
I will wreck your beehole.
I know you will. So, we know what Jacob did during his time off. What did everyone else do?
Disney Dreamlight Valley.
Didn't sleep. That doesn't surprise
me. You know what's the worst part about it, too? I didn't, I thought I was going to get to do, all the Wish Blossom Ranch shit. I still have yet to hit it up because over break, they dropped a new Star Path and they brought in Cinderella. And so I've just been working on that crap this whole entire time.
You've been hitting on Cinderella for a month? Gotten nowhere.
She's a woman. Of course he's gotten nowhere.
Hey, excuse me. I've got a wife.
He has proof. He has proof.
He has proof that Stockholm syndrome is a thing.
Tech counts.
Real? No, Stockholm syndrome is not a thing. Lord knows she could leave my ass whenever she wants and do just fine.
Chris, what did you do over holiday break?
I literally just worked jobs and occasionally would play a video game on stream. And that's it.
Get through anything? Any RPGs over break?
No, I did beat Adventures of Lolo on the NES.
Ooh, that's an accomplishment. That game is tough.
That was very tough, but I felt like it was always fair. Like, it always felt like I had all the tools I needed. I just needed to figure out and execute. And, it's like, it was very well crafted. It did not feel like it was just BS, like you would expect from a puzzle game. But I mean, it was HAL, of course, in 89. So, they were.
I'm assure you at the time, it did not feel fair.
Maybe not. Maybe not.
It did not feel fair.
But
I earned that ice cream.
And I started up Adventures of Lolo 2, and it's, the same, but looks nicer. But, it's. As soon as I started feeling really challenged, I was like, okay, I give up now. Someday I'll get to the other, but yeah, it was Before nice also to
every
like
puzzle
just
game I ever play.
Yeah, it was nice to get through it. It was nice to get through it as well without looking up any guides, like, at all. Like, I completely got through it on brain power, which made for a very non-entertaining stream because it was just, like, me sitting there frowning and just, like, mumbling to myself. It was like watching a toddler do math. It was, like, so, you know.
It's more fun than what our streams were over the break, which were nothing.
Yeah, there you go.
I lie. You know, I did do like two streams over break. I just like played music on one and chatted on the other. But yeah, right, it was a uneventful time off for me, except for MAGFest, which we're going to talk about next week on the show. We're going to have a big MAGFest get together, so we'll save the bulk of that for then. For now, I saw you there briefly. What else did you do over the break?
Didn't sleep enough. Went to a few gatherings. I've been constantly like phlegmy. Like it wasn't even mag flu or nothing. I just had this constant, almost like an allergic reaction that never went away, but I've been stuck with it for like a month. But I'm still enrolled in my board game events, raising some charity money. Going to a few conventions, board game shows, including MAGFest. Kind of been on a social hiatus, but at the same time I can't not do certain things. And I went to Netflix House, actually. I got to check that out, so that was cool.
What was that?
It's basically like an indoor escape room themed around Netflix properties for the most part. Like I went to the One Piece exhibit and it was a series of escape rooms trying to find an elusive devil fruit. Ooh. It was entertaining, though it made me really wish stuff like that existed when I was a kid so I could appreciate it to the fullest. But
dude, I think we had DZ Discovery Zone. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Well, we could cut loose and be on our own with parental supervision.
I never got to go to one.
Same here, honestly. I went to Chuck E. Cheese, and by the time they opened a Discovery Zone near me, well, you can probably guess I was too big for it, so it didn't matter. But we had Chuck E. Cheese, and that was fine. You know, showbiz piece of, like, I got my bit of fun out of that. But, you know, all in all, I can't really complain. It was a good holiday. I had my weird moments where I fear for my job, as lots of people do in the current economy. But yeah. I'm only getting signs of worry from the government, but not from my actual job. My actual job seems to appreciate me so much so that I'm like, well, if they do cut me, it's going because they really have to. So I'll take that for what it is. So saving lots of money when I can, but I still can't stop buying tabletop games and video games. Though I need to start in February. I'm going to call January a soft new year opening, but I tallied up all the money I spent throughout the entire year on all of my vices, so I know exactly how much money I spent. And my goal is to spend a lot less than that this year. We'll see how that goes.
I don't think I could ever sit down and look at what I did and not want to strangle myself. So,
well, that's why you do it. So that then you want to strangle yourself.
That's why you
yourself.
Live in ignorance forever.
No, because you keep you keep repeating the mistakes. Though I did buy a Lego set, but I'm not buying one of those bullshit ones that people are jumping all over about.
Which
I
one
bought
did you
a
get?
Nice. It was a fountain garden that was like $90, and I'm like, oh boy, I might get involved in this hobby. And they're like, introducing Pokemon for $700. Like, suck my dick. No, it's stupid. Like, you're like, here's this Zelda set. Here's this, you know, all these. Don't get me wrong. Nothing against it. And if you have the disposable income, knock yourself out. That's what it's for people who have the money to just say, I'm not going to miss it. But for me, I can't. I own an actual Game Boy. Why do I want a Lego one? You know?
I would have put one together and been like, hey, this is cool. And then been like, eh, all right, now it takes up space.
Yeah, so like with that said, it's like I get the logic there, but it's like, okay, I can build this cool fountain garden and that'll be aesthetically pleasing too. And I still have my Game Boy, my real Game Boy. Like maybe the Pokemon, what I can see people doing, they don't want to go out and buy like, you know, like figurines or whatever. But I think the worst part, even if you don't factor in the cost of the stuff, is like you kind of mentioned, Chris, when you're done building it, it has to go somewhere. I don't have space like that to be putting stuff places when I'm done. I used to buy those like way back in the day, used to make these like constructible figurines of Mega Man X in various power-up forms.
Nice.
And I thought they were really awesome. I was like, yeah, I got to get all the cool power-ups. I like Ultimate Armor X and Armor, like Mega Man X2's armor and all that shit. And after I built the first one, I was like, shit, what do I do with this? Where do I put it? Oh, I'll put it on my computer desk where I work. Okay, that's cool. When I built the second one, he's also on my computer desk. And eventually I ran out of space to put Mega Man X.
Oh, you and make realized room for Mega Man.
Not when I got to make room for literally every other vice that I have in my life. Like, my entire life is vices that take up space. I can't do things like smoke crack. I have to do things that don't deplete. I collect games. So I just have games all over my house. Everywhere.
Wouldn't crack be cheaper?
Debatable, because at least with the video games, they have standardized pricing. The crack man can jack it up when he wants to get me for what I got. Oh, I see you got a new job there. The price went up. So, and also, of course, the whole death thing, the whole dying part.
It is hard finding an honest crack dealer.
They are very difficult to find. There's a certain bit of honor to that.
Can you really have honor in the crack game?
Of course you can. Walter White had it until he fucked his shit up.
That was meth.
I've tried to segue out of this like three times, and Jacob keeps going about crack.
Well,
so speaking of Purnell wanting to lower his finance spending, I've been lowering something kind of in secret for a while. I showed Jacob last June. I clocked in at about 400 pounds, and things had to get turned around a little. So I increased my crack usage. Yes, that is correct. I'm down to 360.
Nice, congrats! Nice.
Congrats!
I dropped 40.
What are you at now?
360.
Congratulations, man!
I've dropped 40. And Ashley and I have both started taking some shots of O'Reilly's Auto Parts. So,
okay, I'm very confused.
Ozempic. Ozempic. Nozempic. Ozempic. Jozempic.
Jozempic. Bozempic. Yeah. Bo-nozempic.
Hozempic.
360, by the way, great number for an Xbox fan.
Yeah, I know, right? Very true.
But, so, out of curiosity, with your regimen, have you been doing this while drinking the same volume of sodas and stuff, or have you reduced all that
actually,
stuff?
I have cut down on sodas, but I've still drank quite a bit. I'm just not guzzling it to the extent I was, but I still have three on my desk right now and one bottle of water. It's not like I've stopped drinking soda. I just got smarter about how much.
And it's also a matter of, I guess, with the Ozempic, your appetite's been dulled, too.
Oh, and with Ozempic carbonated beverages, fucking suck. They give you heartburn like crazy.
And you still drink them?
Yeah, because they taste good. Water tastes so boring to me. I need to get sparkling waters from Walmart. That's what I need.
No, you need to get some, sparkling water, but get some orange juice or fruit juice. What I do here is also I bought a soda stream that might help you too. But get
not with our
like
water.
Sparkling water and some sparkling water and some fruit juice and basically like spike your water, basically just splash it a little bit instead of actually going out and buying like total case. Like you can buy like a nice bottle of sparkling water for like less than $2 and then pat it out with some fruit juice and it goes great. And if I want some alcohol, I slap some gin in there, too.
I should drink more
By the way,
alcohol.
gin is the lowest, for as far as caloric content, is the least voluminous, is the least calorically alcoholic beverage you can get. So,
all about Mountain Dew and Midori.
Yeah, but then the problem is you have to drink Mountain Dew, which is delicious. Yes, but.
Oh, also, we came up with a new one. Coconut rum in Baja Blast is a nut blaster.
I'll bet you it is.
Oh. Yeah. Want your nuts blasted? Damn right you do.
Jacob's like, yeah.
Yeah, right. Aki, what did you do over the holidays?
I mostly played review games and Assassin's Creed Shadows because I want to 100% that game. Nice. I have not finished it yet, and it's driving me nuts. Now, I'm getting close, though. I finally unlocked the full map. I've cleared a lot of the side missions. I'm doing okay. I think in a couple more weeks, I should have the main game done, and I'll be into the DLC, and then I just have to replay it all over again in New Game Plus mode for more achievements. Yeah, so, you know, it'll only take me, like, probably 400 hours to beat this game, but it'll be worth it.
That's the power of the assassin.
Trina is so clingy tonight, and I don't really understand why. She has been on my lap nonstop since hit record.
Does she love you?
Is that not the one that's always getting in your lap?
It is, but it's like she's not just running across, she's like sitting here on my lap.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's our human.
Just chilling.
But I'm super happy today, though.
Why?
Because I just refreshed a web page and it told me I get to order a couple things tomorrow that I'm super excited for.
Gunpla? Camera can't see it, but my face is shocked face right now.
Yeah, there's one that's finally being remade again that has only been sold once in the U.S., and tomorrow I get to pre-order it because they're finally reprinting it, and it's the last one I need of a collection that I've been obtaining for the past, like, 2 or 3 years. Damn. And then there's another Gundam wingsuit that's brand new that's coming out tomorrow. So,
yeah, speaking of that, Consul, how do you store those things?
I have a full house and I'm the only one who lives in it, so I even just put them places.
I'm like, even with the house, like, I have a full house and I'm the only one who lives here, and that's why my house is full of stuff.
So you know exactly where everything is.
Exactly. You probably have like 500 times more board games than I do Gunpla. That's why you have no room.
That is probably true. I have a lot of them.
Yeah, I only have around like 200-ish, maybe 250 Gunpla, and that's it. So, I don't have very many. Too many.
Because it's been a month on the show. We only have about 250 reviews tonight. So, should we crack into these and get started? Get back to the routine?
If we absolutely have to, I guess I can be convinced to do this shit.
Yeah, we have to.
Fine.
If we have to.
Let's get to it. First game to talk about tonight is Away From Home, developed and published by Squishy. Released December 19th on Steam for $24.99. Late at night, you enter their world. You'll inhabit a girl named Abby and influence the world around her. Accompanied by your brother Michael, you'll traverse unfamiliar places, character conflicts, and story-affecting decision-making. You may have the power to help the world or let it rot. Careful, your presence has caught the attention of something sinister. Many indie RPGs claim to be a new quirky game, but Away From Home is a mix of many great RPGs. Characters are full of emotion and let you empathize with them. Don't forget that this world needs you. Purnell, what is Away From Home?
Oh boy. So Away From Home is an RPG, one would call it, with some rhythm elements in regards to how combat flows, in which you control a young girl named Abby, just like you stated, who's traveling with her brother, Michael, around town, which is away from home, to experience an adventure. How does that sound? Exactly as I worded it, because that's the best description I've got. game starts out with you leaving your house, going to visit a friend, and convincing him to teleport you to town. And then you are in town. And you can explore it and talk to people. Exploration involves just kind of walking, running around the neighborhood. There's NPCs lying around that you can occasionally engage with. Some of those people might hit you with a bit of a small side quest. Some of them might just involve some sort of quirky event that could not involve a battle. But for the most part, it is very much a matter of just like talking to NPCs and doing what they tell you to do.
Every once in a blue moon, an event might trigger. And by event, I really mean just like a weird occurrence on the screen where it might, you know, get like fuzzy lines or an NPC doesn't look the way he usually does. And the game is meant to make you go, oh no, something weird is happening. And then it reverts back to how it was. And then you go about your business. Trying to think. In the event that you get into a battle with one of the two mushroom enemies in the game, a music event will take place. And the way it works is that there's like a general jingle that's associated with the monster you're fighting. At this point, there will be bars moving from the outside of the screen on two sides to the center of the screen where they meet and connect. When those bars meet the center of the screen, depending on the color of the bar determines what actions you're allowed to perform. If the bar is red, you need to press the defense button to block enemy attacks. If the bar is yellow or orange, wherever your vision depicts for you, you get a free action, meaning you can either use an attack or an item, one of the three items you can prep for use prior to the battle. If you get a certain combo of perfect attacks plus dodges or item uses in a row, you'll charge your special gauge depending on the special attack you've got equipped. And when you get to the right point where it's maxed out and you're ready to use it, you can hit the special attack button to do it and do more damage. The enemy dies, you get experience points, potentially leveling up and putting stats into one of four stat points traits. I'm going to go with the few benefits or the positives I can think of before I go down the unfortunate rabbit hole here. Game looks beautiful. I love the graphics in the game. Musically, the game also has great music, and it's extremely quirky, too. I like the different NPCs you come across and the way they're designed and drawn out. I like exploring in that aspect and experiencing what they have to offer. Unfortunately, though, that's where the praise kind of has to end. Because this game, especially considering they're selling it for $24.99, is extremely unfinished. I almost feel like it's designed in a way to get people to buy it, exceed the two-hour mark so that they can't refund the money, and then come to an abrupt ending where the game just stops, which it does. So, to put it in perspective, there is one town area you can explore, and despite talking to NPCs multiple times, because for a while I had no idea what the heck I was supposed to do to advance the narrative, the very brief narrative, despite doing that, I didn't come across a number of the mini games that I saw in the trailers that got me excited for the game in the first place. There was a dance game in the game, for example. I did come across a dance machine, but the dance machine is not working. Nothing led me to an NPC that was like, I'll fix that dance machine if you do, if you buy me, bring me five biggly dorks. Nothing like that happened. It was just, I never saw it. I came across a booth that was run by flies, but I never experienced a fly swatting minigame. And despite that, it wouldn't matter if I did anyway, because given the nature of the game being that there's not much of a coherent plot to drive me forward exploring the town, aside from just being curious and wanting to drive the game because I had to review it, there is literally no reason for me to care if I do come across a minigame, because you basically do the bits in the town until you trigger an event that makes you go to the air quotes forest north of you. And once you go to the forest, by the way, you cannot go back to town. You're locked out of town. You trigger one event in the house to the left of the entrance. Everything goes weird. And then you fight a hat man in the woods whose difficulty spikes goes way up compared to the rest of the game at this point. But if you manage to beat him, which I know a lot of people in the forums weren't able to because he was that hard for them. Once you beat him, you get a quick cinema. The game is over. And if you go to the forums, the guy goes, well, that's the end of act one. I'm like, no. That's not how you do that. You don't release a game that's not in early access for $24.99 and then pull some bongo like that. Exactly. It's like, it's one of those cases where sometimes I'll review a game for this show that I may have purchased, and then you might get me the game. I'm like, oh, cool. I can, you know, get my money back and try the game. And then I'll come back and say, oh, man, I am so glad I got to experience this game for the show, because now I can tell everybody to get it and I save some money. In this case, the opposite is true, where I bought the game. You told me, hey, we can review it. And now I'm like, thanks for saving me $25 that I wasted, Joe, because I would have been pissed if I had paid the money for that game and had that happen.
Yeah.
And I'm not even I was livid. And the scariest part of all, I'll tell you the scariest part, though, I think I've noticed the review starting to catch up. The first time I did it, I went to the reviews on the page to see what are people that were playing the game thinking early reviews. Reviews were mostly positive, which is bullshit. Because it shouldn't be. It really shouldn't be. And people were like, you know, this game is great. You know, a couple of people were like, it has a few issues. You know, it's got some learning curves. The battle's a little tough, but I'm getting used to it. And the developer is really good with, you know, handling criticisms and stuff. I'm like, okay, well, maybe something's off there. I'm not picking up on these things. But now, if you go there now, you might start seeing more mix where it's like, what the hell's going on with this game? The game ended abruptly, or they'll say, people will say things like it's getting a little bit more towards the mixed end of the spectrum. But it's unfortunate because I've been anticipating this game for months, and it got to the point where it was originally meant to release in October, and the guy was like, well, I'm still working on it. Or no, it was done. He said it was done, but Steam has some issues with it, so they made me wait a little while. It'll be out in December. And then people were all excited. Is it coming out in December? He's like, I'm all done. I just want to put one more mini game in there and I can release it. And then the game came out after all that rigmarole. And I'm like, no, this game ain't freaking done. This ain't even close to done. This is barely a demo. Like, this is... Yeah.
Someone in the discussions on Steam says that the game has fewer than 10 unique fights.
Yeah, yeah. And many of them don't really even matter. Like, for example, yes, like there's the only wandering enemies you fight, as in the only non-event enemies you fight are a tiny mushroom and a big mushroom. That is it. One time I walked up to a house, knocked on the door, a duck came out, fought the duck, and then the duck goes, oh, I'm sorry, you're at the wrong house. And he goes in the house, and that's the event. Nothing. Just, I fought a random duck. Who goes to this house, and that's the thing, does nothing.
We have some other quirky games coming in the coming weeks. Hopefully those turn out better than this one. Let's not beat the dead horse. $25. Let's start off strong. Give me your thoughts.
Man, the absolute deny it. And I'm glad I could tell people that, because if it could save one person $25 without getting beat by the two-hour max non-refundable state, that I did my job. Deny.
They need to be upfront about what this is on the Steam page. I could see a lot of people filing complaints about the Steam page that this advertises itself as like a full game that's not in early access, but there's one fucking chapter in it. That ain't cool.
It is not cool. It's disingenuous.
All right, next up, Hero Seekers, developed by Vanguard, published by Kemco, released January 9th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Xbox PC, Switch, PS4, PS5, PC, $19.99. The world has been rewritten and the very name of Hero erased from memory. Once three brave warriors defeated the Demon King and brought peace to the land, but now their deeds are lost to time. Lunette, the only one who remembers the true history, sets out on a journey to restore it by summoning the forgotten souls of heroes, reclaiming the light once stolen from the world. Chris, what is going on in Hero Seekers?
Okay, so Hero Seekers, this is a Kemco RPG, but this is, I guess more recently they've been releasing these games from Vanguard rather than the X-Create, and especially Hit Point games. X-Create's like the one that they mainly do, and then Hit Point's my personal favorite, and they haven't come out with a Hit Point game in quite a while. So I guess they're working on Vanguard stuff now. Anyway, so if you are if you need a refresher on what some other Vanguard games by Kemco are, I reviewed also Astral Takers and Dragon Takers. So the kind of difference between these is that, you know, they are, you know, RPGs where you walk around and, you know, go to dungeons and towns and, you know, quests and side quests and stuff. But the battle system is a little bit different. It's presented in a first person view, a la like a Dragon Quest kind of thing. Also, the character portraits are always idly animated. You know, they're idle animations while they're talking and stuff, which is something that either drives you crazy or, you know, it's fine. But for me, it's like if I stare at them too long, I start to see like the still images start to kind of undulate. And maybe that's just my own brain. Anyway, so Hero Seekers is
gameplay wise, almost identical to those other games. So we won't go too far into that. But the plot of this, I noticed something about Vanguard is that they do tend to like to have their plots be a little bit more complex and mysterious than the other games. There's usually some kind of central mystery that you're trying to figure out, and so this game is definitely like really start strong on that foot. So you play as Lunette, ding 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 ding, female protagonist alert. This is like the third Kemco game I think I've ever played. Is she hot? She's like a princess character, so she's just kind of in a princess robe with a crown.
Boring.
So okay. I don't know.
Of course, she's hockey.
Kind of an archetype. But here's the thing. You might like Nyla. She's the half demon girl that comes up. She's
yes, I already.
Yeah,
did.
She's doing the breasting boobily thing.
Oh, I appreciate that.
The breasting boobily.
I will never forget that phrase of like it, for anybody who doesn't know, that's the meme of the males writing female characters. She breasted boobily down the stairs or something like that. Yeah, that will never leave my head now. Anyways, so yeah, as Lunette, you basically start the game from the end of an RPG adventure where her and her two like male character RPG people defeat the Demon King, which I always have to roll my eyes at when the Demon King is actually called the Demon King. That's so much of a trope that the longest 5 minutes actually makes fun of it.
Who determined that title for him? Who just gave him that?
I know. Well, it's just like, you know, it's always
maybe
like
named Clancy.
So like, you know, in like The Legend of Zelda, right? Ganondorf is the Demon King in some of the games. And but he has a name. He has a name. We know him. He's a character. But a lot of these games will just be like the Demon King. He doesn't need any other name. He's just a king of demons. So that's where I'm like, I draw the line at it being like going from like, oh, okay, they're doing this to like, oh, this is a ridiculous trope. But anyways, but here's the thing about the Demon King. So Lunette and these other two characters in a very tutorial-esque final battle, that is to say you win easily, and you get to play around with like all the best like skills in the game and stuff. They defeat him, and then Lunette wakes up and she's in a world all alone from her companions where the Demon King actually won and has taken over the world. So she's like, wait, this isn't how it happened. And so that's the central mystery, is she's trying to find out, well, why did we defeat the Demon King and then I wake up and he won? You know, how did he reverse Uno this situation, and what are we going to do to stop him? So along the way, she actually locates one of her other characters, another mage character. She herself is kind of a mage character as well. Plot thickens. More characters join, more locations are discovered, more mystery is unraveled, things like that. Now, the thing that's cool about this game, so I mentioned before in Astral Takers, where you get to recruit like these kind of not anonymous, but kind of there's no real story to them side characters. Like you basically get to summon like these other characters and stuff and like have them fight along with you. This game has that. There's certain locations where you can use an item called memory stones. See, it's part of the plot that there are these like kind of gravestones where the memories of heroes can be a special skill can be used to bring them into like your world. They're from other realities and other histories and other parallel universes. And so you use like a memory stone to get them. And once you do, they become part of your party. You can just put them in. You just have this range of like available characters. And the thing is, when you use a memory stone to recruit a character, that character is brought in randomly from a pool of over 700 characters.
Wow.
That's a lot of characters.
Yes, and when you have them, instead of them being simply...
for what I expect out of a Chemco, really. that's actually kind of impressive.
I feel like Vanguard kind of, you know, they really make this their thing. Because I feel like they do kind of have a little bit of an iceberg-esque aspect to, like, their... to certain elements of their games. I haven't beaten one yet, though. I plan on beating one of these three in the, you know, when I have time for once, so I can really see like what they get into. Because I've beaten X Create games and I've beaten Hit Point games. I haven't beaten any of the Magitek ones, but I have. I am very interested in these. Anyways, so yeah, pool of 700 characters, and you can pull, like, you know, one or 10 at a time. I pulled 10 at a time, of course, because the game starts you off with enough memory stones to do that a couple of times. And yeah, you just basically, you know, they all will have, like, kind of, you can tell just from, like, the letters over their levels and stuff that they have, like, certain aspects in common, so you can kind of put together your party based on that rather than having to get to know every single character. However, every single character does have a written profile that if you look at it, you can actually read their biography and how they died. And, you know, because these are all characters that have died at some point trying to fight the Demon King and losing. So it's like, yeah, you get to like kind of know their history and stuff. But then there, of course, are characters that are essential to the story. So it's just kind of a mix. But you don't have to have those characters in your party or anything. It's just they'll be the ones providing the narrative, while the other characters are kind of like more your battle companions. Like I said, the battle system is relatively, or, you know, comparatively pretty simple. You know, like I said, it's the same deal as any RPG. You equip weapons and items and stuff, and as you fight more battles and grow your characters, they unlock more skills. The skills will be like, you know, a 200% strength attack that, you know, has an ice element or something like that, or two 160% damage strikes. You know, very clinical as far as, like, them saying what they do. And of course, if you decide not to engage with the battle system at all, you can just throw it on auto battle if you want.
That's always good.
So even though this is a... Huh?
Auto battle is always good.
Yeah, yeah. I like auto battle because there's actually, as far as I can tell, these games don't ever come with the extra, like, little bonus things that the Chemco games tend to, which is, like, you know, double your strength boost. Or
I said the DLC boost.
Yeah, this one has no DLC to it whatsoever, so and there's nothing in the menu that makes things any easier. There's just a toggle between normal and easy difficulty, and maybe you unlock a hard mode later on, I don't know. But
there are boobily breasts.
Yes, somewhat. I mean, I haven't run into any characters that are, like, really overtly sexual, but the one character who's half demon is, like, you know, her pose and her demeanor and stuff is a little bit that way.
I found the full quote, by the way, which I am now going to read because I have to.
Absolutely. I love the quote.
Cassandra woke up to the rays of the sun streaming through the slats on her blinds, cascading over her naked chest. She stretched, her breasts lifting with her arms as she greeted the sun. She rolled out of bed, put on a shirt, her nipples prominently showing through the thin fabric. She breasted boobily to the stairs and titted downwards.
So you actually found it.
Yep.
Jesus Christ. I give myself peace to believe that that was done in parody. Like, it was written in a parody.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, yeah.
The frame of it is, this is how male writers write women.
Yeah.
Breasted boobily down the stairs.
So should people tit downwards to the store to check out Hero Seekers for $20?
Yeah, I think this one's intriguing. If you are intrigued or liked any of the other Vanguard games, I mean, this one seems to have nothing really different about it. I mean, even the menus are the same, which, by the way, the menus are so frustrating because it's all like they got like these big, colorful buttons and like, you know, even though they do say what they are, they're not just icons. It's all buttons and stuff, exactly like it was a mobile touch game, but it does not have touch on the Switch. It does not have that capability. It's just lined up that way. But yeah, no, it's a buy it from me. I like these games. And like I said, this one is very intriguing. I kind of really want to like play more of it and unravel that mystery. So
very good. All right. Well, Chris, that is it for you for this episode. We will let you get going. I know that you are planning on taking a little bit of a step back from the show for a little to focus on life for a bit. You said you will still visit us for Chemco Games. So the door is always here for you to drop by and hang out with us.
Yeah, of course. No problem. Like I said, like work's busy.
Like 2 weeks for our anniversary episode.
Yeah. Like
in that, 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Work's been busy, and I do have some other projects that are pretty exciting that I may hopefully get to announce pretty soon, but not yet. So
musical projects,
yes, and ooh, some other stuff. So
oh, and OnlyFans.
Wow. That was the perfect rust. Nah.
Chris, anyways, any final words before we let you go tonight?
No, that's it. Have fun gaming, gamers.
Catch you later, buddy.
Later.
Take it easy. All right, we got some Arcade Archives games to talk about. Developed and published by Hamster. Touchdown Fever, released January 7th on Xbox Series X and S, Switch 2, and PS5 for $9.99. Touchdown Fever is a sports game released by SNK in 1987. Tap the buttons to push forward. Simple controls make it easy to enjoy the flow of American football. Over 100 formations selected automatically, even beginners unfamiliar with detailed football tactics can relax and enjoy the game. Jacob, how is Touchdown Fever?
That is a damn lie about how new players can just relax and enjoy the game. So, Touchdown Fever is a, I believe it was 1987 arcade game released by SNK, and it tries to do it tries to make like an arcade version of football with this, and the controls are weird, and they're going to take a while to get used to, which is, I'm going to be honest, like that's my main gripe about this thing. I've played it a bit and I'm still not quite used to everything with it. So pretty much you can move your player, but then once you decide like when you're going to throw the ball or when you're going to kick the ball, you have to then make these judgments as to like how far you're throwing it. And it just, I'm not going to lie, it still feels like anytime like I, like my receiver catches a pass, like it just feels like pure luck. Like it has yet to feel
Are you going to tell me that an arcade game meant to eat quarters from 1987 is not as fleshed out as Madden 2026?
No. Yeah, what? I know that's a big surprise. My real issue is that like it takes, like it's not like it's really not that simple of a football game, and I actually like applaud how complex like it feels like. But like if I was playing this in an arcade, I'd be pissed, like dropping like 25-50 cents on this thing and immediately having my ass handed to me by the NPC who like just runs right through me like I'm a screen door.
Those are the 80s arcades.
I know, but like I wouldn't have like wanted to reinvest like, you know, all right, I'll pop in another like 25 cents, try again and see if I can figure out what's up. Like I wouldn't have done that with this. Like as this home release, I think it's real interesting. and it's definitely worth tooling around with. It's frustrating as hell. You know, it's one of those, it is what it is, yeah, kind of thing. Like, SNK was they're just trying their hand to see if they can make an American football arcade game. I mean, I don't think there was really anything other than 10-yard fight, was it called? I think
so. Like, if that, there was nothing at the time. So,
yeah. And it's just innovative.
It was, dare I say,
unique.
Oh. USAF was on the ball, yeah, at that. All right, well, let's hypothetical on this one. It's okay. 25 cents per quarter, so a buck a game. $10, 10 games at the arcade. What do you think?
What would I spend $10 at the arcade on this game? Is that what you're asking?
You?
Or are you asking?
Would you? Or would you spend it at home? Would you do it either?
All right. I would not spend $10 at the arcade on this. However, I would say I would spend $10 on this home version of it. Then I guess maybe as I actually got good at the game, I guess I would spend $10 on it at the arcade game. Problem is that there's a huge freaking learning curve with this thing. But yeah, for $10, honestly, it's worth checking out at the very least. I'm in the middle of try it versus buy it on this.
No. When in doubt, try it.
It's conflicting. But it's one that you're definitely gonna have to practice a while to get the hang of it. But it's cool that they brought it back.
Cool. ACA Space Invaders, released December 24th on Series X and S, Switch 2, and PS5, is the Arcade Archives 2 series from Hamster. It is a shooting game released by Taito in 1978. Predates us. The origin of the masterpiece that once captivated all of Japan has finally arrived on the Arcade Archives. This title includes both the black and white and color versions, and the sound has been reproduced to the limit of how it sounded back then. Experience the timeless legend once again. I believe on Christmas Eve, this celebrated the 500th release of the ACA series, most of which are not on Xbox, but that is changing gradually. It is nice to see. How is Space Invaders?
So Space Invaders, we all know what the game is, right?
Nope, never heard of it.
Right? Nope, you never heard of it? Okay. So it is a romance simulator between a laser cannon and some aliens.
Good.
Yes. Yep.
And what do you do?
All right. I just told you romance the aliens with your laser.
Then what?
All right. So it's really a arcade shooter game, classic game. We're all familiar with it, or should be familiar with it. You run this little laser gun thing at the bottom of the screen, and then you have these little concrete barriers which help. Good lord, that link that you posted in chat is hell. Anyway,
I know, right? Japanese. It's in Japanese. So.
Oh yeah, I've seen those before. Oh man, I forgot about that. Okay. Anyway. So you got these concrete barriers that you can hide behind, but the aliens, which are slowly falling down from the sky, they have these little, they have lasers too that they could shoot back. Well, not back at you. They just shoot at you. And if you're lucky, your laser can actually deflect one of those things, but pretty much what you have to do is just blast all of the aliens out of the sky. There's UFOs that show up in the background and you can shoot those for extra points. It just keeps going, and the aliens get faster as the amount of them goes down. You just keep going until you die.
Horaclight says the romance version was beat 'em and eat 'em. There's also Space Invaders Part 2. We'll cover these together. This one came out December 31st for $9.99. This one released in 1979. The enemy invaders have returned more powerful than ever, having acquired new tactics like splitting and receiving reinforcements from UFOs. With added features like the rainbow bonus to aim for high scores, this title is long beloved by skilled experts looking to hone their abilities. Also, I completely missed it before, but BX Latino Heat subbed for us for the 34th month. So shout out to Latino Heat as well. Space Invaders Part 2, what's going on in this one, Jacob?
So this one is a sequel, obviously, whereas like the previous one, you were able to either play in black and white or in color. This one now has lots of colors, and it also adds in a couple of new enemy types, slightly zippier gameplay. There's different UFOs in the background, but not a whole lot has changed. It's really, it's like... you know how during Pac-Man's early life, they actually switched up the mazes, like, you know, so people, you know, weren't just playing the same damn game over and over and over again.
Yeah.
This kind of feels like that. It feels more of like an update than like a real sequel. It's not bad. I mean, it's like, do you know the Space Invaders formula? Do you like it? Okay, well, cool. Here's more. Like, that's all it really is.
I mean, in the late 70s, that's all it had to be.
True. That is very true. And you got me on that.
Yeah, goddamn right I do. So, still hold up?
Yeah. I mean, the gameplay does. I mean, it's addictive. Not as much as, like, I used, like... All right, so I don't know if you ever heard the phrase "turn over the machine," but like on Space Invaders, like I think the original score only goes up to like I think it's 9,990 or something like that, and then because it didn't plan for that extra digit when you go to 10,000, it just resets it back to zero, and then like you count back up. I actually did that on the Game Boy Color version back way back in the day. And nowadays I'm just like, how the hell did I have that kind of patience? Like
now today you're like, I got 70 points.
It's a, I made it past the first screen.
No, you didn't. Like
I shut up. Yeah, I did.
All right. Well, ACA games, they are $10 each on Series X and S, Switch 2, PS5. The ACA 2 versions, of course, include the variable refresh rate and time attack mode. Are these worth picking up for $10 each?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, if you're only going to do one, I would suggest Space Invaders 2, but both of them are definitely worth picking up.
Cool. All right, Jacob, you got one more game to talk about before you split. That is Mel the Space Cat, developed and published by Emberbox Studio, released January 15th, Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for Xbox PC for $5 per platform. In Mel the Space Cat, you'll guide Mel, a courageous cosmic cat traveling across alien planets in search of safety, even if that means escaping from energy traps, laser cannons, hazardous landscapes, and the mysterious alien Theo. Across 40 handcrafted space levels, your reflexes and timing will be pushed to the limit in a journey filled with charm, danger, and zero gravity surprises. Jacob, you and Aki both played this one. Someone start me off. What is this game? Jacob, start me off. What is this game?
Hey.
Sorry, I'm drinking water.
Aki, start me off. What is this game?
I'm chewing food.
Pernell, start me off. What is this gun?
So this is a video game that involves a series of characters going on a quest to save the world from some shit.
All right, so it's the sequel to Mel the Cat, which was this platformer, kind of a puzzle platformer, I guess you could say. I don't mean maybe whatever. Anyway. So Mel doesn't have any seeker powers. It's just you could jump and you have to jump over your enemies, jump over the environment, and just make it from point A to point B. It's fairly simple gameplay. I mean, it's not bad or anything like that, and it's amusing to pass the time with. I'll give it that.
Aki, give us your thoughts on it. What is this game?
You play as Mel and you're jumping over doggos and
avoiding bullets and spikes. It's just straight up platforming. You got a nice jump and you can dash while you're in the air and all that fun stuff. And you're just trying to get to the end where the rocket ship is. It's a decently little fun game. It's nothing amazing. It's just more Mel the Cat, realistically speaking. So
I genuinely enjoy this one. I think it's a cute game. It's enjoyable enough. I do want to say these are the kind of games I'm going to miss with our quote unquote change of direction. If people missed, we are stepping away from triple stack games, of which this is one of them. I don't want to focus on titles that release three separate times and are the same exact product that you buy three separate times for three separate achievement stacks. I can't support the practice anymore. And we are going to hold off on covering triple stacks when they switch to Play Anywhere and they are one purchase. That's it. We'll cover them again. But
and on top of that, there's just so many of them that release every month.
There are.
We could like have three full shows that are 3 hours long that are just on those.
Yeah. I don't like this direction gaming's going.
Yeah. I
guess that's my soapbox.
The way the world's going.
I guess that's my soapbox on triple stacks. I don't like the direction that gaming is going with an explosion of cheap triple stacks that are just meant for achievements, trophies.
That's unexpected from you. You used to be all about that kind of stuff.
No, he's never particularly liked it. I don't think you ever liked it. You just accepted it.
It's more that I just put up with it. Because I did some of them myself, because you get bored and you're like, what can I do in 15 minutes to get 3,000 gamer score out of boredom?
Okay.
I hate you.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, I was correct until you said gamer score.
Yeah, yeah. But Jacob, in your 15 minutes, how many times would you jack off to Mel the Space Cat for $5?
I would recommend it. I would recommend spending 15 minutes, playing some knuckle shuffle.
I'll give this one a buy it for $5. I think it's cute. It's fun. I don't like triple stacks. Until they stop, we're stopping too.
Yep,
I say give it a buy it, though. I still like the game.
Yeah, I'm much in the same. I think it's a fine little game. If you like these styles of games, they're really good. They're well made and everything. I'm all for it.
I've even explained to some of the developers, like, this isn't anything against your company. It's just the way the fucking industry is going right now, where I don't blame them for doing it. They make money on it. So I can't be mad that they're making money and living a good life, but I don't want to cover them.
Here.
Jacob, Aki, any other thoughts on Mel the Space Cat?
Nope.
Any other thoughts on triple stacks?
I don't like them particularly all that well. The only reason I ever played them was because I got them for free to review, and I was like, okay, fine.
Fair. All right, Jacob, we will let you get going. Do you have any final words for the night?
Go back to check it out, the Facebook page again.
Why?
Well, because, I mean, I've been posting, like, news and fun memes and shit like that since, like, we've been on hiatus, but now we'll be doing podcast posts again.
No, we won't.
Wait, you actually are? Because hasn't the Facebook page not had those for a while?
Well, yeah, for, like, a month.
No, I mean, like, last year. Weren't we way behind on posting them or something?
We were at times because Facebook, they're honestly, it's a really shitty platform.
That doesn't shock me.
And it becomes real hard to tag video game companies and their pages.
Yeah. But you can tag people in Facebook?
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, I didn't even know you could do that.
And it becomes real hard. And sometimes, like, we're not able to do it at all. And then as of late, they've started, like, I think you can only tag like 10 things in one post. Either that or else we've been throttled or something. But it just got to the point where I'm just like, I just throw up the YouTube link and like, I'll try to tag something, but like, it just ends up not being Like, I end up having to do it in the comments. Like, it, I could comment with every single, like, you know, thing I need to tag, but I can't do it on the actual post itself. It's
fair.
It's absolutely stupid.
No.
Yeah, I haven't used fake Facebook in, oh, Jesus, a decade, probably.
All right, Jacob, fuck out.
All right, bye.
Be gone, fart.
All right, let's move on. Next game, Dune Crawl, developed and published by Alien Trap, released January 5th on Steam for $19.99. Dune Crawl is an open-world action game, action-adventure game, where you take the sandy seas atop a gigantic crustacean festooned with black powder cannons. Play as a solo crab keeper or with a crew of up to three other friends in local and online co-op. For now, what the hell is going on in Dune Crawl?
So, right off the cuff, for those who are in the know, the best way I could describe Dune Crawl would be to call it a top-down Lovers in the Dangerous space-time with some action combat sequences that exist outside of your ship. For those who have no idea what I just talked about, well, in this game, you play as a character who is trying to liberate, you know, his people from... I can't remember the name of the freaking group, to be perfectly honest with you. It's an evil group of, like, marauders in the midst of the desert. And you do this by exploring the wastes on top of a giant mythical crab. Because you're pretty much considered, like, the crab bearer to the people. So it's like, yes, you're the one who's destined to do this and save us all. So, giant crab that has a steering column and a series of cannons and some storage units and whatnot. The way this works is cannons can be manned, the steering can be manned, and in addition to that, the deck itself can be manned because you'll be exploring this desert sea atop this crab looking for quest locations and dungeons to explore and the like. And every once in a while, you might be boarded or attacked by other crab walking monsters. I know it's like some kind of weird ceramic pot monsters that are associated with it, which I kind of found hilarious, like the ceramic creatures. But you'll basically have to fight them off by, you know, basically attacking back with your cannons and such, and also potentially by onboarding onto their crabs, whether by jumping off your crab, running across the desert, and climbing a ladder to get on their crab, or you load yourself into a cannon and launch yourself onto their crab and fight back. The enemy can do that to you too, which is why it's good to have guys that can, you know, batten down the hatches, as they say in pirate lingo. How do you fight exactly? Well, you start the game with a cutlass, basically for melee combat, and then everything after that, guns, also in explosives. You'll find them in destructible objects, sometimes in treasure chests. Also, you'll be able to purchase objects from various towns or by way of getting blueprints for them on adventures, which then make them available to acquire later on in the game from shops and the like. Guns themselves and all have limited ammo, whereas the cutlass is infinite. I am of the personal belief that that cutlass is not meant to be used unless you have no other choice or to destroy objects, because the melee combat in this game is a little dicey, and frankly, most of the enemies you fight are shooting at you. So don't bring a knife to a gunfight. You'll lose, most likely. So as you're running around doing such in nature, like you're fulfilling quests, and like you'll come across, I guess, objects that can be broken, walls that can be destroyed using explosives to find secret rooms, and various equipables and upgrades, whether they be upgrades you can equip to your crab to bolster its defense and potentially abilities, or you might find talismans or tunics, which are equipable to your main character or one of your friend's characters to give them various perks. One of my favorite ones, believe it or not, was one of the early ones in the game where if you roll, you leave an explosion behind, which was pretty handy to get out of hairy situations where I was getting assaulted by bugs and the like. And speaking of bugs, not the bad kind, thankfully, you can also occasionally come across walking little baby insects and also not so baby insects that can be subdued using some gunk that will feed and heal them or calm them down. And then you can ride them. In addition, like on a normal setting, like walk around, ride them, and fire your guns at enemies while you're evading and the like. This is kind of fun to do because there are additional hit points that can absorb bullets for you, because once you take enough damage, you'll get knocked off. And if you're able to heal it, you can reheal it and get right back on. Again, enemies can do the same thing, though, so be mindful of that. Hearing me talk about it, you might think that I didn't like it because I may not seem the most enthusiastic, but that's not true. I actually do think this game is pretty cool. The upgrades may not always feel the most, you know, exciting to get, but the gameplay as you explore and whatnot is pretty fun. The one hurdle I would say, however, is that I think this game genuinely needs the multiplayer element for it to thrive, kind of like Lovers in the Dangerous Space Song. That is one of my favorite games. I also will not play it alone. I need to play it with friends. In the case of this game, if you play it single player, they do give you a sort of a ghost companion who will kind of help you out on the crab ship, and you have to issue commands to it. But it's subpar at best. You'll spend a lot of your time, just like if you were playing single and Lovers in the Dangerous Space Time, using your shield to just block bullets as you can until it runs out of energy, and then you'll suffer. Because the guy can do work, but he's not a human. He's definitely not multiple humans. So it's one of those games where if you can get friends together to play it with you, to explore dungeons and fulfill quests and get new gear and succumb to friendly fire and the like, I think you'll have a fantastic time, because I did have fun playing this game, even mostly alone. I did have a friend I could play with, but we weren't able to get together for a ton, so I spent most of the review by myself. So I can say, exploring on the ground, I had a lot of fun, even still doing that. But I think a lot of the fun in this game stems from the crab walk, the crab battles. And doing those in single player was not nearly as engaging as being on foot. So I guess if you listen to what I just said about it and you were like, well, it doesn't bother me so much, I'm fine with a ghost companion. Well, I think you won't be particularly bothered by the single player crab activity, at which point I think the rest of the game will be fun to you too. Because even though I wasn't really particularly captivated by the narrative, I still enjoyed exploring the map, fulfilling quests, you know, scratching the itch and ticking the boxes, as they say in gaming. I enjoyed those things. But if you do feel as though you really want to have somebody on board to help you because you don't feel like issuing commands to a little AI companion, then I'd say get some friends on board or just skip it.
All right. $20. Official verdict.
Buy it with friends. Low try it if you're alone.
Good. Next up, Super Farming Boy, developed by Lemon Chili Games, published by Renzo Europe Limited, released January 16th, Series X and S and the Switch for $9.99. In Super Farming Boy, you play as Super, whose mom and friends have been captured by your evil nemesis, Corpo, registered copyright trademark, who unlawfully hires you to work on your own land, taxing all proceeds for himself. Now with your friends and mom up for sale, you must harvest your way through challenging adventures, saving enough money to buy your mom and friends back. This seems very true to life. Aki, what's going on in Super Farming Boy? Did you enjoy it as much as I did?
Probably not, actually.
Because, like, I've been in love with this game since I first got my hands on it.
Yeah, I did not enjoy it as much as you did at all. In this, you play as Super. He's just a little kid, and he has this really good farm, and then this storm cloud comes through and is like, hey, fuck you, and takes everything because he's a dick. And now he's going to pay you 1 gold for everything you do every day. Oh, and then someone else gives you a whole bunch of money, who knows who. He requires you to buy back all of your abilities, all of your friends, and your mom. Woohoo! He's a dick. So you have to go around farming on your land, and that requires you to, you know, destroy blocks that are, you know, in the way. Sometimes they're rocks, sometimes it's a volcano or other such things. Sometimes you have to cut down weeds, pull out dead plants, things like that. And then you have to till the land and water plants to grow new plants that you can turn around and sell. Yay! It's fairly basic that way. But
it gets interesting. It's interesting with the mechanic of pulling up vegetables. Every vegetable that you pull up has a different splash zone. And if another plant is in that splash zone, it gets picked automatically.
Yay!
And it adds to a combo. which the I don't know what there that was combo perfect does.
Timing. Thank you, USAF, for the sub.
If I remember correctly, it increases the money you get.
It does. It increases your combo chain, which increases the money you make. Plus, it gives you a bonus as you rack up the combos that you get immediately, and you don't have to wait until the next day to get that money.
Okay, I was wondering what that did. All right.
Yeah, a good example is in the first world or the first season, they give you corn that if you pull up a stalk of corn, it also hits the one to the right of it. So if you lay a bunch of corn in a straight line, pick the one on the left, it'll pick all of them. And they have a fever mechanic where it kind of sends everything into overdrive, where all the plants grow back immediately. And
as long as they're within a certain range of you, which you see on the map because it's rainbowy.
Yeah. And they will, if you trigger a chain at the right spot and either just walk in a circle or fly in a circle, whatever you want to do, you could rack up infinite combos for as long as your little fiesta lasts.
Someone was clearly better at the game than I was.
I fucking love this game.
I think my highest combo was like 8. Just 8. That's it.
Oh, I'm fucking
stuck at this game.
Oh, Aki.
That's like the one thing. I think the one gripe I had, though I'm sure there was a gameplay reason for it, was I hated the crops that didn't auto grow back. It was like, well,
you gotta go and get all
of those every time, but they're worth more. Like, yeah, I get they are, but I don't feel like doing that.
Yeah, they're worth more, but they fuck up my combo, so I don't want them anyways.
I would never buy anything that wasn't a regrow.
Because
they were pointless. They were absolutely pointless to have. Because, sure, they help you once, and then you never count on them again, because they're gone. They're one-time use. The only single-time items I will use are the ones that I find in the wild.
Yep. That's basically what all I plant. It's just that stuff, realistically. I don't buy stuff in there. I kept saving all my money to buy abilities and stuff. If I get enough of these, I can do better and faster if I just buy these. And that apparently not true.
You
have to get the money faster by spending the money.
Yeah.
I just thought if I bought my friends and stuff, they automate some of it. So I was like, once I get this, it'll be so much easier.
They automate very little, really. The most helpful thing is the one that waters plants for you, because they'll just water everything all day. I think the biggest hump is that the first two seasons in this game are somewhat punishing.
Very.
And a lot doesn't get fully explained unless you try to do something. Like, I was watching our friend Keith at the ID team play this on stream, and it wasn't until like 40 minutes in that he planted a carrot that it popped up with the tutorial about combos and hitting things around you.
Oh, I forgot. Wasn't there like one other mechanic that didn't get mentioned yet, where if you plant the same vegetable in like a 2x2 or something like that, you get like a super version?
You learn that near the end of season one, maybe automatically, or maybe it pops up as one of the challenges, and then it explains it to you. So that's, yeah.
Yeah.
It could maybe use a slightly better tutorial, maybe.
I think I end up doing it by accident, because you start wanting to make the combos work, and you're like, I'm going to make this corn go around a loop. I'm like, wait a minute, the corn became a super corn. How'd that happen?
I would have figured it out that same way.
A lot of days. But if you can learn which vegetables to avoid planting in group formations, or which groups to avoid, and you know how to lay out the farmlands to take advantage of combos, this goes from a game that you're not really enjoying that much because you can't figure out the farming aspect and making money, to a game where you're like, holy fuck, this is amazing. I just got 1,000 combo on friggin' tomatoes.
Yeah.
And don't forget also that the sound effects are very, very soothing. It's like it's got that casino magic vibe too. It's like, oh, the noise, there's the noise I want to hear.
Because you played this on PC, right, Purnell, a while ago?
Yeah, I had it on Steam.
And it just hit Xbox last week. Again, it clocks in at $10. Series X and S and Switch. Aki, what are your thoughts for $10?
Whilst it's not a game for me, because I don't like the stamina mechanic or anything, it just bogs the game down for me. It's a very competently made game, so I understand why people would find it fun. So I think it's probably worth it if you like more farming sim style games and stuff. This is 100% for you. It's really good.
I think you got to be a fan of puzzle games more than farming games. I enjoy the puzzle mechanic. I don't really care about the farming mechanics at all. I don't play farm games. I don't play Harvest Moon. I don't play Stardew Valley. But I like puzzle games.
The game really counts as a farming game. It's largely the puzzle of the getting that right combo going.
Yeah, and cleaning up. And once you get in the swing of things, the cleanup every day is basically nothing.
Yep.
It's just a routine, and you get into it, and you lose a lot of time. $10, I think, is ungodly underpriced for this game, for what's in there. It is an absolute no-brainer at $10.
Whoa, don't give them any ideas.
And if you've liked what we heard, tune in next episode, as we should have the dev on chatting with us about Super Farming Boy.
Farming like a boy does.
Doing anything farming on Thursday, like Purnell? You want to join that one?
We shall see, but farming like a person does.
What do you think of the game at $10, Purnell?
I think I gave it a buy it when I did it. I liked it a lot. I know some of the season can be punishing, but I guess again that's part of the puzzle, right?
Yeah.
Once you hit that third season,
start rolling in money in that third season, and it sweetens it so much.
Unless you're playing like me, which is stupidly apparently. Because
you're still in the first season. You gotta plant some corn and eggplants next to each other.
I mean, even one of the simplest ones, what was like, just like corn, 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 tomato, corn, 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 tomato.
Yet next time I get back to that season, I will plant those.
Just look for regrowables. Next game, Milo's Dream, developed by Light Up, published by Rattleika Games, released January 16th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $5.99. Milo is a very brave, smart, and playful dog, only he can defeat the evil, cruel King Big Flea and his evil henchmen who are terrorizing the Fairy Kingdom. Explore four magical branching locations, solve challenging puzzles, defeat dangerous enemies, collect dog bones to earn special new abilities. Playing solo or together with local co-op multiplayer, only you, and I guess your co-op player, can help Milo in his all-important quest. Aki, what is Milo's dream?
Okay, and this, you play as a good boy named Milo, and this is very old Zelda style. You exit your house, and you have to go save all the fairies from the evil Big Flea, and he kills lots of just overgrown bugs, basically all of them, from giant worms to mosquitoes, etc., etc. And he does that by charging into them and then running away so they don't immediately hurt him right back. He does eventually unlock different magical abilities, like flinging a wind cutter out or a bit of fireball in something's face, things like that. They only go a short distance away from him, so they don't continue from like wherever you're standing to the very end of the screen. They don't go that far, but there is a pretty decent distance of like maybe three or four lengths of Milo away from him is where they hit thereabouts. And you're going around unlocking some of this map, finding the one shop in each area where you can buy new upgrades, be it an extra health or an extra magic point or different abilities with the maps. For instance, one of them will actually give you a map, which is super useful. Another one will tell you where different upgrades and stuff are not upgrades, like hidden chests and stuff are throughout the map. So you know, oh, this area isn't cleared yet. I haven't gotten everything out of here. So I need to go back there and figure out what the hell I missed and go grab shit. And yeah, there's four bosses, I believe, maybe five, probably. Each one is tied to a different key, and I believe they're also who you get your different magics from, and I know there's four magics, and you need those to unlock the last area, which I assume is just a big end boss fight. The achievements are basically just killing X amount of enemies, getting X amount of bones, which is your currency to buy stuff at the shop, and for killing the first two bosses, you will get everything before you beat that second boss, achievement-wise. So, yeah.
Map that kind of tracks in a Rattleaka.
Yeah. It's a cute little game. There is a lot of circular stuff in it, because when I said there was a shop in each area, there's a shop in each area. They do not share inventory. So
that makes
if
sense.
You want, yeah, if you want this upgrade for the map, you have to go to whichever store has that upgrade for the map, which means you're probably going to be circling this a lot, because enemies drop upwards of like 3 bones, and each map upgrade is 200. Any enemy, no matter what its size, can drop anywhere from 0 bones to 3 bones at max. Chests, you can occasionally find some, and depending on how big the chest is, they can have anywhere from, again, when they drop bones, it's a 1 to 3 bone for each bone, and it's actually shown by how big the bone is, but it drops it in the squares immediately around it, so you can get 8 times 3, so 24 max from most chests. So, yeah, it takes a while.
Jacob missed both Bone Talk and an opportunity for Steiner Man. Yeah.
Oh, okay, I understand the bone one. Joke. I don't know the other one.
Just Google Steiner Math. You'll be good. Milo's Dream is $6. What do you think of it?
I think it's cute. I was really for it. I thought it was really cute. I liked it. And if you like those old Zelda games, this is definitely going to be up your style. I had never played one, and I just thought it was cute.
Nice. And if you buy it in the next week, it is $4.79. So you could save $1.20.
Go do next it, folk.
Next up, Corgi Space, developed by Adam Saltzman, published by Finji, released December 10th on Steam for $4.99. Corgi Space is a collection of 8-bit games that have short legs on purpose.
Dump bump.
This anthology includes more than a dozen action, adventure, arcade, and puzzle games, and each can be thoroughly explored in under an hour. For now, what's Corgi Space?
A series of games that can be explored in under an hour.
$5. Give me your verdict.
Buy this fucker.
Tell me about it.
Okay, I'll give you a little bit more. So, again, a series of mini games that can be completed very quickly, and they're all built off of, I assume that it's themed that they were developed on Sega's Pico or something, but I could be wrong. But even still, these are very, very, very simple games. Some will be hits, some will be misses, but the important part is they're all tiny and meant to be kind of dabbled in and experienced.
Tim has one, the yellow with the crank on it. Playdate. This looks like something I would have seen on Playdate.
Yeah, but if I'm not mistaken, Playdate didn't have color. All the games were like, weren't all the games like Technicolor or some mess? I could be wrong. I only got to use a Playdate once, but yeah, I could totally see something like that. Barring the color.
Thought of the tiny games kind of reminded me of.
And I will say the ones that do hit will absolutely hit. Like, there was one that I remember really getting into where you were like a little dog and you were or a dog or a rat or something. And you're trying to get to the cheese that's at the center of the maze, but you can't get to the cheese until you can break down the wall that's surrounding the cheese. And the way you do that is by building up your appetite. And one thing worth noting about this is that none of the games explain the actual mechanics. You're actually meant to figure them out by yourself.
as you're playing around with the controls and stuff, which again might result in some games being a little annoying because you're like, what the hell am I supposed to be doing here? This is sucky. I'm done. And other times you're going to go, oh, this is making sense already. I'm ready to make some action happen here. But the dog one clicked with me fairly quickly in that it becomes like basically a block pushing game where you can, you basically eat something. It becomes an object when you poop it out. And then you combine like types to form bigger types. All the while, each time you do this, you're increasing your appetite. So you lose appetite when you eat something, and you increase your appetite when you combine two things to make a bigger thing. So, and it kind of works like that old game that everybody was like, was it 1428 or something like that, where you had to combine the numbers to get bigger and bigger numbers.
Oh, yeah. It works like threes. That.
Yes. Yep. Yep. And then eventually, once your appetite gets to the enough such you can eat through steel, you can eat through the steel wall that's protecting the cheese, and that's how you beat the game. And I love that game to death. Despite how simple it was, I wish in some way it was a bigger game that utilized more space, like more level designs, and like where you had to figure out the optimal way to beat multiple stages. Then there's also the very first one, which is called like Rat Dreams, which is essentially like an action-adventure game where you just run around stabbing dudes and not getting stabbed yourself.
And traversing a top-down Souls-like with no walking, only dodge rolls.
Yep. Basically, you hit the button to either swing your sword or, I guess, jump in a direction. And that's
mole,
the game.
Mole, mole, a Sokoban puzzle with a twist. The twist is bombs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is a good Steam page. I like Steam page with humor on it.
Yeah, I think this game, like, even if you've come across a number of games that you don't like, as long as you like two, and I think you'll like at least two, because I like more than two of them.
Yeah.
I believe this game is going to be worth, it's going to be definitely worth it, $5.
Like, yeah. Well, yeah, let's go down the features quick. Tell me how accurate these are. Breaking out of jail a lot.
Yeah. I've played multiple games on her that involve breaking out of some form of a prison.
Being a pug.
Yep. That's in, that you do that.
Falling off stuff.
Yes, Jelly Boy does that.
Terraforming a planet.
Huh. I guess so. Though I guess that was me more like just devouring the planet. But yeah.
Mushroom farming.
I don't remember that one. Unless it involved me slashing those things in that freaking deck of cards game. The mushrooms kept killing me, so.
Drinking various popes.
Yep. I like that. Was one of my favorite games too.
Stabbing Nazis.
Oh yeah. One of the games opens up with a guy saying, "Damn Nazis." Rated M for Nazi stabbing.
Stabbing Nazis is fun.
So, yes, it is. May it never get old.
Indeed. All right. $5, Corgi Space. Verdict.
Easy recommendation. I want to say fucking why not, because it's fun to have the opportunity to say that, but the game is absolutely worth its weight in gold. I think it's worth the time. If you like UFO 50, then you definitely would like this.
I want both of those on Xbox now.
Well, UFO 50?
Yeah. Maybe
I'm
one
surprised
day.
It's not already.
Next up, we got a two-pack of games from Synergy Circle Games, Shroomageddon and Slime Flip, both developed and published by Synergy Circle Games. Released January 6th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and Xbox PC for $4.99 each. In Shroomageddon, sizes power, collect coins and power shrooms to grow, tower over your enemies, and smash through a chaotic world where only the biggest survive. Shrink in your prey, grow and you bring despair to your enemies and hope to your allies. Aki, what is Shroomageddon?
This is, remember, I need to be nice. This is a game where you play as a shroom, and in it you are basically trying to catch these little coin-like things that are around, and after you grab, I think, four of them, you grow one size. You can also find blocks, and destroying them sometimes gives you a coin. Sometimes it also even gives you a little mushroom that you can also eat to grow your size, which should be cannibalism, but, you know, hey, whatever. And with that, You get bigger, and eventually you go and you find other shrooms that are around the level that are blocking your pathways. And if you're a little bit bigger than them, you can walk into them and kill the ever-living shit out of them. If you're the same size or smaller, you're going to get damaged, and that takes you down a size. And it is very hard to tell if you are larger than them unless you are like a couple sizes larger than them. Because if you're just one size, it is very hard to tell because everyone moves and they're all dicks. So, yeah. There's also a bunch of spikes and stuff that are all over the place. If you hit those, obviously you shrink as well. So this ends up being a whole bunch of platforming to try and jump over things and to dodge in between spikes so you don't get shrunk, so you can kick the shit out of the next jackass shroom that's in your way, so you can find all your little blue shroom family members, I guess, and pop them all out of the ground until you've claimed them all and can move on to the next level automatically. You do not have to destroy all of the shrooms on the level if you don't want to. As long as you can get to all of the shrooms that are blue like you, then you're fine. When you pop them out of the ground, they also become basically jump pads for you that fling you up pretty decently. There is one actually interesting mechanic about this game. When you're small, your jump is a lot higher than when you're bigger. You also move faster when you're smaller. So that's interesting. You can't always make every jump, even with one of your shroom siblings turning into a trampoline for you if you're big, which is kind of cool. But it also really likes to punish you, so you're not going to be finishing most games at the max size because the game doesn't like you. Get over it. Yeah, I did not get over it.
I can tell. But,
yeah. Other than that, you know, it's basic platforming. Thankfully, it's not too precision-y. Some of the jumps are precision-y if you're large, but otherwise, it's generally pretty fine.
They also have Slime Flip, another game where you help a little slime monster that got stuck inside a dangerous dungeon reach the ending where the exit back to the forest can be found. Choose between walking on the floor or on the ceiling and use that to your advantage to avoid traps and obstacles blocking your way. What is Slime Flip and how does it compare to Shroomageddon?
Better and worse at the same time. You play as a slime and you basically invert the gravity of the area you're in, so you can either be walking on the ceiling or on the ground. Throughout this, you use chests to boost your jumps. You also are using the various traps around the area to kill other slimes, so you can pick up the slime coins that they drop. Just in order to get achievements, there's not actually anything you can spend any of them on or anything. And this one is a lot more precision-y than Shroomageddon is. Some of these levels are kind of, I don't have another word for bullshit. So some of these are just outright bullshit. And like one of them, I think level either 4, 5, or 6 took me like 20 minutes to get through because the first like 3 traps, I kept dying within them and it was infuriating. Also the other slimes that you're trying to kill, they do move. They have a tendency to move back and forth, but they kind of do it at random. So they're not like, oh, it's going to move to here and then it's going to stand here for a little bit and then it's going to move back. No, sometimes it moves a little bit here and then back. Sometimes it moves a lot here and then back. You never really know. So getting them into traps can be kind of a pain in the ass. Because when you're flipping things, it also seems to screw up their pathing a little bit, which because they get inverted in gravity as well, that's how you fling them into traps. And so sometimes they just get closer and closer to you because you've screwed up their pathing and they decide, oh, this is the other side, so I need to move this way to get to that point and then walk back and forth between here. But it's like, no, you're supposed to be doing that over there, not here. I'm here. You're not supposed to be here. So that can sometimes screw up and kind of screw you over. Thankfully, none of the levels are particularly long. It's just that sometimes the mechanics don't really want to work with you. Most of these levels are like, you should be able to complete them in like 10, 15 seconds. They're all very short, very quick once you know what you're doing and if the game actually wants to play with you. Most of the time it doesn't. It wants to just watch you cry tears of blood, and it is what it is. But that's this game.
All right. Well, Shroomageddon and Slime Flip, $5 each per platform. Some more triple stacks, synergy. We appreciate your time with us. We hope you change course. But as these are $5 each per platform, what are your thoughts on them?
They are fine. It's kind of what you would expect from these style of games. You know, it's some of the levels are kind of hard. Most of them are pretty easy. It's a nice, solid, simple little game. So if you're into these, go for it. If you're not, you're not missing anything special.
Cool. Pick one over the other.
No. But both of them have some good points. Both of them have some it pisses me off points. So they're like about even.
Can you pick a favorite of the two? Fuck you, Joe.
Yeah, I came into this thinking one of these has to be my favorite. And the more I think about it, the more I'm like, no, that pisses me off. But this is cool. But that really pisses me off. Okay, what about this other one? That's really cute. And I love it. Oh, that pisses me off so fucking much.
All right. Well, one final game to talk about tonight. And we are coming back with a bang.
Lots of them.
You know, you got to play the sound effect, right?
SML After Dark.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yay.
Oh. Yeah.
That was unique.
Oh.
Best. BEST. Developed and published by Dolilah. Released August 29th on Steam for $11.99. Best is an adult visual novel where romance, competition, and betrayal intertwine. 100 participants, $500,000 at stake. Who will you trust? Make your choices, build your relationships, seduce or betray, and become the last one standing. Aki, are you the last one standing?
No, sadly. But I am one of the last ones standing, so I guess that's good enough for now. I can kneecap everyone else later on.
What is this game?
In this, you play as a self-named character, a guy who's coming to the U.S. from France on a study abroad thing for his university, because he wants to learn better English and, you know, just make sure he's better at it. He's a big soccer guy over there, and that's part of how he got his scholarship. And he's coming over here and finds out almost immediately that he and a lot of other students at this highly athletic school have all been, without their permission, entered into this BEST program. And it is basically a whole bunch of contests, and it starts with 100 people in it, and they start cutting them out as quick as possible, trying to get rid of a whole bunch of them all at once. And the first thing you have to do is you have to basically get along with 5 really hot people. So, you know, that was pretty easy.
Sounds like such a hard game for you, Aki. Oh, no.
Oh, yes. It's so difficult. Oh, because, you poor. Know, I'm... Oh, yeah, it's so hard. I know. Oh. But basically, it's the women's soccer team, basically. There's 4 of them and their coach that you meet a little later. And guess who your love interests are? Does it have a vagina? That's your love interest. There you go.
Stuff.
Yeah. great. But the main 4 are going to be the 4 teammates that are all part of basically the trip that you came by on. When you were heading to the U.S., you were put on their private plane because for some reason this soccer group has their own private plane, and these four girls were all on it since they're part of the team, but none of the other players were for some reason. I'm not going to look into it. They're hot, and that's all I need to know. And yeah, so all of these tests wipe out these other players, end up being either ones where you have to go out and find stuff, so you have to prove that you understand the layout of the land and that you have to understand riddles and stuff to prove that you're intelligent, because they don't want someone who's just good at sports. They want someone who's just the all-around package, and you give plenty of women your package, so it's fine. Some of them are sports challenges. Like the very first one you do ends up being an obstacle course. You end up, you get put with one other person, and you get to actually choose who that person is that you side with. So that's great. And yeah, you end up throughout all of this, all of your choices, for the most part, end up increasing one of four stats that you have: your buddy, sport, temperament, and another one that I don't remember because I'm bad with words. And all of these stats end up dictating whether you can do certain actions throughout the game. So it kind of can softlock you from doing different things on different pathways. Because let's say someone wants to have a swimming contest with you. If your sports aren't high enough, maybe you can't swim faster than them as many times as you need to, so instead maybe you have this other skill that's higher, so you can cheat instead to try and win it. But all of these choices end up reflecting on your character. Maybe they'll notice you cheating, maybe they won't, maybe they'll respect you for winning, maybe it'll just piss them off more at you. You never know. It's great. And yeah, you end up getting 5 episodes in this, which ends up being like, I think, like around 2 weeks or something, more or less. And it's basically, it starts right before the college semester starts. So you end up being extremely overwhelmed and relying more and more on these ladies around you. So yay! Sadly, you can't have a harem with absolutely everybody, because some of these girls really don't like some of the other ones.
It's supposed to be one winner. Come on, you can't have a harem. Now you're greedy. You're greedy.
I am so greedy, and the dev knows it, because I have spoken a lot with the dev.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, we had like an over an hour long conversation a couple days ago. And I was like, yeah, I really like all these girls.
And, do I even need to ask your verdict on this one then?
Probably
you've
not.
You've already befriended the dev?
Yeah. You have to remember, one of the four main girls is a redhead with freckles. There is very little things I like more than that, just in general.
All right, give me your verdict. Let's wrap this show up.
I totally love this game, and it does something that most other visual novels or avians even, they don't do. It actually has music that has lyrics in it. Which may sound stupid to most of you, but most of the music in visual novels is just instrumental stuff. This one, most of the songs have lyrics, and there are bands that I've never heard of, and they are so good. Hey, are so they, good. Totally
are
worth
they
buying.
Songs that are, sorry, but unique to the game, or are they like third? No, I'm asking legitimately this time.
No, I'm pretty sure these are actual official bands. I don't know if the dev commissioned them to make these songs or if they just licensed them, but these are proper bands. So, and they're all good. They're so good. I don't know how many times I was playing the game and then I noticed there was music playing and I stopped to listen to it and then spaced out for like 10, 20 minutes just listening to the song over and over instead of actually playing the game. I can't count the amount of times I did that. The music in this is so fucking good. Anyways, yeah, totally buy this game. It is amazing. They are working on a best 2 because this is sadly one of the games when Steam decided to change everything thanks to, you know, a couple of dickbags named credit card companies that stopped being able to update their game properly they were planning, I believe, to have all of this just as like DLC, kind of like a lot of these do, for the first game. They were just going to add like, oh, here's another three or four chapters. Now that we're done with it, here you go. You can buy that, continue the story. Instead, now they have to make it into multiple games. They are currently working on the second one, so I am very much looking forward to that, because oh my god, these girls are so cute.
Pernell, any thoughts?
Fucking,
yeah. Sorry, I'm over playing Pico games, sir.
Oh, man. With that, that's the end of the show.
Woohoo!
Made it through. Not horrible for our first show back. Got the training wheels off. Oh, my god. Fuck, next show is going to be fucking stupid.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah. That guy did a lot.
Oh, man.
Next show's going to be short. It's going to be great.
Yeah, right. Thursday, next show. Be sure to tune in, because we will have the dev of Super Farming Boy on. Bree and Jacob will be here along with Aki as usual. And
if I must, we'll have
a full month of news to wrap up on. Well, as
I'm going to need you to fuck off, sir.
Oh, well, then.
I want to bring the Crib Notes version.
On that note,
adieu.